George Jelinek came to Bloomington in March of 1998 to interview a handful of Indiana University vocal professors. The singers joining us for these interviews included some of the most famous names from the world of opera: Giorgio Tozzi, Virginia Zajani, Martina Arroyo, James King, and Teresa Kubiak. They all came to WFIU for a full day of interviews and conversations. In this week's special edition of Profiles, George Jelinek talks with Giorgio Tozzi. Here's George Jelinek.
I'm talking to Giorgio Tozzi with great pleasure. We'd known each other in New York, but that was some time ago, and we sort of lost track. He knew where I was, I knew where he is, and I am sure that he's enjoying what he's doing now.
Yes, I certainly am. I've always been interested in teaching. In fact, when I was at the Met, I did teach for a little while there at the Juilliard School, and off and on I taught in those years. And now I don't feel as though I retired from a career. What I did, I just changed professions. I changed hats, as it were, and I'm enjoying it very much, particularly because my colleagues here on the faculty, many of them are people with whom I worked in different places, at the Met particularly. For instance, with Virginia Zajani, we go back to, I better not mention how far back we go. I don't want to give away her, well, my age. But the first time we met was in Cairo, Egypt, when we were working with the same opera company there together. And that goes back to about 1951, I believe.
Mm-hmm. Actually, you didn't really change a profession. You just took a different branch of the same profession.
That's right. And working with these young people, these young adults who are so interested in learning and developing, I'm still deeply involved with music, perhaps in a certain respect even more so, because now I delve into a lot of music that I didn't have a chance to when I was singing all
That's
the time.
Right.
And it's wonderful. It's a discovery trip all along the way.
But in looking into your own biography, so to speak, you are really a continuation. You're continuing a chain because you once studied with two great artists of the past, Rosa Raisa and Giacomo Rimini.
Oh, absolutely.
They were wonderful. In Chicago. And here you are, having made your own wonderful career. Now you can pass on all this acquired wisdom to a younger generation.
That's true. Well, and it was wonderful because, you know, Rosa Raisa was the first Turandot. And they were personal friends of Maestro Puccini. And I remember them, you know, telling me not to portamento poor Puccini out of existence, as was the wont of a lot of people who just sort of scooped all over the place making these portamenti.
They were kind of musical institutions in Chicago when you grew up.
Yes.
When you grew up. And did they teach in tandem, so to speak, or they had individual pupils? Because
well, they had individual pupils.
They did.
Yes.
So you studied more with Raisa?
Well, I spent most of my time with Giacomo Rimini.
Rimini, yes.
But then I would have lessons also with Rosa Raisa.
Right.
They were a great couple. She was such a terrific lady, beautiful, wonderful, grand lady in every sense of the word, and yet very down to earth, very human. And he was fiery, performer in his own right, and he still remained that way as a teacher. He was wonderful to work with.
Right.
One of the things I was very happy about too is that they stressed text and diction, which is an essential part of singing.
Absolutely,
and it was wonderful.
Which I'm sure you're doing now to your own students.
Oh, absolutely.
But
absolutely.
Interestingly enough, Giacomo Rimini was a famous baritone. And he must have found you a baritone too.
Well, that's true. And as when I was when I started working with him, I was quite young. I was about 18 years old, 18 or 19 years old, and so I had a great indoctrination into the baritone, the Italian baritone repertoire, so that at a very early age I was singing some big arias. Now, people would think, well, that's not nice. It's not healthy for a young person to do that. But the fact remains that at that time, all of us started younger.
Of course.
You know, we started younger. I was a featured soloist at radio station WGN in Chicago when I was, 24 years old.
Let's capture you in that particular situation when you were 24 years old and doing the following. Eritu, Giorgio Tozzi, a baritone at one time. You were always a basso cantante. Later on, you developed into a basso cantante. There was always, to my ears, a bit of a sound of a baritone in your voice.
Oh, yes. Well, I'll tell you, when I sang in the radio stations, they were naturally all soundproofed. And when I sang in a soundproof room, I had a very lyrical baritone ring to my voice. And yet, even at that time, when I would go and sing in an auditorium with an orchestra, for example, the feedback from the auditorium would come back at me with a much darker sound. Mm. Now, I wasn't trying to produce a darker sound. I was singing exactly the same way I did in the studio. But as the sound travels away from its source, it tends to gather overtones.
Yes, overtones.
And so mine came back rather dark, and that confused me. I thought, well, what's happening? Mm. You know, I heard this dark sound coming back, and I wasn't trying to be dark. And I started observing very carefully, and I noticed that there were a lot of singers that when I worked up close with them, when I was on stage with them or in a rehearsal room, their voices sounded higher and brighter than it sounded when I went into the auditorium to hear them. And I started to learn a very important lesson from that.
But by the time you went to Italy to form your career, so to speak, you were already a bass, right?
No, not quite. Mm. I had done a musical in London. I was doing the lead in a show at the Adelphi Theatre in London. It was a British show. Mm-hmm. Very, very corny show, but it was fun. And in it, I had to play the role of a prize fighter, an American prize fighter who had the soul of a poet, if you can imagine such a thing. Well, anyway, it was an interesting show. It was a fun show. But then when I finished, I decided to go to Italy and work seriously again into the classical repertoire, the operatic repertoire specifically. And so that's when I started to make the change, because over there they heard that I had a good low range. My teacher there worked from that point of view, and I certainly felt very comfortable with it.
Yes.
It didn't seem like I was making any tremendous metamorphosis. It occurred very naturally.
Yes.
Yeah, and I always retained the baritone.
And you retain
ping and center to the voice.
And the high range, relatively high range of the baritone.
Toward the end of my career, years when I was up in the years, I started to do more roles that were more baritonal. For instance, of course, the Hans Sachs, which I did quite a bit. And then, of course, later than that, I started to do Scarpia and Janiszewski, things like that, which I enjoyed very much. My only regret was I didn't start sooner with those operas.
Well, of course, and then there were roles like Figaro, which is comfortable for both basses and baritones.
Oh, that was
probably more comfortable for baritone, but it's pretty high. High bass, low baritone, let's
say. Yes, but you know, since the pitches were changed from the time the composers composed the music, we're all sort of doing a shifty thing in the fact let's say pitches have changed in some cases a half step and in some cases even a whole tone.
That's right.
And so that makes a big difference in the voices, sure.
Yes. Well, we were sort of mentioning your Mozart roles, and I don't have a Figaro at my hand, but we do have a Mozart concert aria, which you recorded in Europe somewhere.
That was recorded at the Mozarteum in Salzburg.
That's a good place to record Mozart. Here it is, a concert aria, Aspri rimorsi atroci.
Così dunque tradisci disleal principessa a folle. Accusare l'ardito se l'ognon trovi esser tradito il meritai oggi se basti. Ma dove, dove fuggirò da me stesso?
This is not a useful aria for by Mozart, and at the time when he wrote this, he was writing the famous Da Ponte opera. So this very, very tragic pronouncement is almost strange because he wasn't writing any tragic operas at the moment.
It's a wonderful piece.
But it's a great piece. And again, of course, this is definitely a bass role. It's not a baritone role, as far as I can see.
Well, it takes in a wide range because it goes from an F-sharp to a low D.
Mm.
So it encompasses quite a range.
Right. I'm looking at some of your Met roles. You did Rumphius 44 times, Don Basilio 23 times, Fiesco 24 times. I remember your Fiesco, and it was something very remarkable for me at the time, because I don't remember any Fiesco who made such a vital change between the prologue and the first act. And there are 25 years in between. You came on as a young man, very young, vital man in the prologue, and obviously 25 years older, still not an old man, but it was very, very well done. I remember
thank
that.
You.
And you did Colline, and then your road led you back to more or less the baritone road, because Hans Sachs, again, is a very, very high bass.
Yes, but it was... It felt great. Mm-hmm. I did at the Met, of course. We used to make cuts in the part, but then I went to. I was invited by Dr. Liebermann to go to Hamburg and to do Hans Sachs on his stage there in Hamburg, and that was uncut.
Mm-hmm.
So I flew from the Colón in Buenos Aires, where I had been doing Don Basilio.
Mm-hmm.
And flew up to Hamburg to do the Hans Sachs, and there didn't have that much time to rehearse. In fact, the only rehearsal I had was to go through one part of the opera with the conductor and the Meisters. And then after that, no staging rehearsal, except a young man showed me blueprints of the stage. And I said, now you come in from this side here, and then you go there, and you meet Pogner here, and then you go and you sit down over there. So I thought, well, okay. And I guess ignorance is bliss. I didn't know how difficult it was supposed to be. But I had great fun on that stage with those people because since there was no real locked-in staging, I was able to relate more to them.
Yes.
So I used a lot of eye contact,
yes.
and I got it back too, and it was great fun. It all worked.
Well, actually, they threw you to the wolves, so to speak. I mean, without much preparation, and in Germany yet, right?
Yeah,
you didn't have any difficulty adapting into German roles, right? You had you did some Dallons already before that.
But. Not in Germany.
Not in Germany.
But you know, I'll tell you. The morning after when I did the performance that afternoon, it was a Sunday afternoon. Dr. Lieberman said, "Well, could you come to my office tomorrow morning? What time does your plane leave?" I told him, and he says, "Well, please come to my office in the morning. I want to talk to you." So I went, and so he told me that he had tried out practically everybody who had done that role extant. That he liked my interpretation the best. He said, it's strange. You don't speak German, but I understood. He said, I could understand about 95% of all the text that you sang, and I heard it distinctly and clearly. So he said, I'd like you to do the role of Zax in a movie that we're going to make of it. And well, wonderful. I was really quite surprised and pleased, and I was thrilled. And it turned out to be, to tell you the truth, it turned out to be my favorite role of all. Gosh, I hope my Italian friends don't take that out on me, because I love Verdi and Puccini and all. But I must say that role particularly, and the reason I love that role so much, because I had done Pogner with that wonderful Paul Scheffler at the Met. And I heard that man do that role. I was on stage with him, and I thought, oh, my God, this is a consummate a portrayal of a human being. And so I just, loved it.
Let's hear a very memorable scene. As a matter of fact, the final scene of Die Meistersinger, where Hans Sachs is hailed by the entire populace of Nuremberg. Hans Sachs, a role which you then sang at the Met also.
Oh, yes. In fact, I sang it at the Met before. I did it in Germany. Mr. Bing and I had a little contretemps because he wanted me to sing in Antony and Cleopatra. Mm-hmm. And I didn't have a very good feeling about it. I loved Sam Barber very much, a wonderful composer. But I just wasn't in the mood to go into that. I wasn't feeling exactly that right about it. So Mr. Bing talked with me for a long time, as did Sam Barber. And since I wouldn't do it, I said, "I'm sorry, I just can't." And he said, "Well, in that case, I'm afraid we won't be able to offer you any roles at the new opera house when it opens up." I said, "If that's the way it is, I don't want you to be unhappy. I don't want to be unhappy, so no hard feelings." And I thought, "My God, now what am I doing?" And about an hour later, my manager called up and said, "Mr. Bing called me. He wants to know what opera you want to do next year."
You think it was just blustering?
And so off the top of my head, I said, "Like, do Hans Sachs." And then I hung up, and I thought, he'll never hold still for that. Sure enough, he came back and said, "It's a great idea. Let's do it."
That's remarkable.
Yeah.
But you didn't give up your Italian roles that season.
Oh, no, never. I wouldn't do that in a million years. Don Carlo and Nabucco. Oh, God, what a great
You know what happened
role.
To Nabucco? The Met dropped it after one
it's
year.
It's a singer's opera. Year. Yes. And it's so wonderful. Yes. Yeah.
Yes. And certainly an so opera no, for the bass.
No, of course I didn't. Neither the French either. When you love music, you love it all. And I remember a show called Finian's Rainbow that was on Broadway for a while. And there was a song sung by a leprechaun in that. His name was Og. And he sang, when I'm not near the girl I love the girl I'm near. Yeah. And that's the way I feel about music.
Yeah. Well, you did your share on Broadway, too. Well, now that you are, as we said, in a different part of the same profession and you're communicating to the younger artists, how do you find the message that you're conveying to them based on your experience worldwide?
Well, the thing is that the biggest message that I wish to convey, and I tried to convey in a novel that I wrote, called The Golem of the Golden West. And I dedicated that book to those people who understand and appreciate the individuality in all of us. We're all individuals. And the more we can understand that and relate to that, the more we can understand one another. We lose that sense of stereotyping people. Right. We start to see them as human beings. And that's what I had to do all my life in my portrayal of the different roles, to understand the person, not just an operatic cliche,
right,
but a human
the
being.
The individual, yes.
And so I try, I when I approach with my students, I realize that every one of them that comes into my studio is an individual, unlike any other individual. He's unique. We're all unique. And I try to understand that there are basic principles of singing naturally,
right,
which I try to inculcate in all of them. But at the same time, I do all that I can to encourage them also to become expressive and interpretative and bring something of themselves to each piece of music they sing, whether it's a song,
right,
whether it's a Broadway song, whether it's a piece of art song, or whether it's an operatic aria, to bring of themselves to it and to feel that.
Well, it's a very, very valuable point, and I'm sure you are successful in conveying it to your students, and I'm certainly confident that they appreciate it. It's been a great pleasure talking with you again, seeing you again.
George,
you're looking terrific. And I hope we'll have an opportunity to talk a little more once this hour is over and exchange a few impressions.
Well, it's my pleasure to be here, George. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
I'm very happy at our reunion.
A couple of Georges.
Right.
My pleasure. Thank you.
That was George Jelinek. He visited us in March of 1998 to interview several Indiana University voice professors. The featured guest on this edition was Giorgio Tozzi. Production assistance for this program came from Michael Paskash. I'm Christina Kuzmich, and for WFIU, thanks for listening.